Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. Well, this is the wrap-up show for open season, and we have the same gentleman that joined us for the beginning of the open season, Walt Francis. Walt Francis is public policy author and consultant, but probably for most of the, if not all, the listening audience, the author of the Checkbook's Guide to Health Plans for Federal Employees in its 33rd year of you running?
34th year.
34th year. I'm a year behind. Okay, 34th year. Great to see you.
Nice to see you.
And I went to listen to you last week when you had a presentation in Montgomery County Executive Center and took notes and enjoyed it. So it's good to have you here. And we're just doing the best of questions. And John Elliott, federal benefits strategist, retired Fed, retired seminar presenter, but still answers emails. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob and Walt, of course.
All righty, let's do this. Now, we're really going to pump you for questions today because you got a week. We couldn't be doing this next week. We have to do it this week, and it's we're here for you, 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080, and the question should be health care plan related. All righty, you were kind enough to give me some of the best questions from your presentations at the different health fairs and the like, and I'm just looking at the first one that you wrote down. And said, what's the best plan for high drug costs?
To which the answer is, there is no best plan for high drug costs. There's a lot of possibilities. Obviously, typically we tell people, shop for the plan that on an overall basis gives you the best deal, taking into account the premium and you're likely out of pocket. And that's, in general, the right advice, okay? Look for a plan that's going to save you both ways, either for sure in the case of lower premium and very likely in the case of out of pocket. But if you have a particular condition, you know, that it's very expensive. For example, a particular name brand drug you take that costs, you know, at retail some number, let's say $100 a month or more, and there are lots of drugs that more expensive or more, then you want to be in a plan that reimburses you well for that drug. Okay. And you might do a very simple thing, which is to go to the plan website for the plan you're in, and some of the other plans we recommend as goodbyes, and see how they'll reimburse you for that drug. Is it one of their preferred name brand drugs would be the question you'd ask. You can ask your pharmacist, okay, which plan pays best for this drug, or which two or three plans pay best. And you'll pretty quickly find a way to narrow it down to a handful of plans that are good buys. And there are some big differences in how well they reimburse drugs generally, but the real question will be your particular drug.
What happens if somebody has a particular malady, let's say bone marrow cancer, and the drugs are insanely expensive for that, that would blow through most any kind of normal deductible outside the federal plan, but you could be talking about $80,000 a year for this drug. Are there any plans that we should stay away from? No, should never say that. I can't say that. Are there any ones that come to mind that would be able to handle that without any restriction?
Yeah. Well, the key factor in a situation like that is you want to be in a plan with a good catastrophic limit. That is a low dollar amount that is the most that you can be out of pocket. The plan almost for sure will cover the drug. You need to check that, of course, but you're just going to blow through, you know, they'll pay 90% or whatever, but you're still going to be $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, whatever, $1,000 out of pocket. And you want a lid on that.
In that scenario, would that person be a candidate for Part D Medicare?
They might be. Most federal annuitants don't take Part D, which is the drug benefit in Medicare, because they don't need to. In fact, in general, Part D plans are not as good as federal employee plans in drug coverage. They're good, but they're not as good. But there's lots of cases where it can make sense to sign up for Part D. A simple example is, suppose you're an annuitant with Medicare Parts A and B, you like the national plans that give you 100% wraparound, so you pay nothing for doctor and hospital, but you do have to pay for drugs. Well, for you folks and a lot of others in other situations, GEHA's standard option is a great buy, but there's one little catch. It doesn't have really good drug coverage. It only pays half the cost of name brand drugs.
Right. And can I say I have part GEHA? And I take one drug, and the reason we changed to GEHA from a more expensive plan is even though my drug cost went up, you're right, they pay 50%. Of course, you're right. But
made a good decision, John, too, so we're both right.
But when we compared the net effects for both my wife and her whatever drug she takes, we still save money, so hence we switched, even though we pay. But we don't take a lot of drugs. I mean, so it was more cost effective to move from the higher premium to a lower premium plan.
All righty.
So that's the type of decision during open season, or one of the types you need to look at. Too many people go on autopilot and stay in whatever plan they're in forever.
Okay, we have a caller that's on auto hold. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello? Can we help you?
Yeah, I'm affected by the windfall elimination provision, and I've gone to Social Security twice. First time they said, well, don't worry about it because you made enough, I'm working again, and I shouldn't be affected by it. So I went and I thought, you know what, they say that now, but I want to get it in writing or I know exactly how the process works. So I went again this past week, and they said, no, I'm going to be affected. I only get 30% of my pension. Is there a some way to figure out how this works?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Also, when I was working,
we both know the answer.
Okay. I also worked part time, and I was just under the qualifying threshold for to calculate as a good year, and they said that I count for absolutely nothing. Is that correct?
Guys,
let me answer in a more general way, and then okay. John, you. To help me with this if I get stuck in it. Let me first explain to the people who don't know that there is something called the income-tested premium for Part B of Medicare. It affects only people who have a pretty high retirement income or retirement and earnings income, the threshold for a single person is $85,000 adjusted gross income. And for a couple is double that, $170,000 adjusted gross income. If your income is higher than those amounts, you'll have to pay more than the regular Part B premium. And if your income is a lot higher than those amounts, it could be two or three times the regular Part B premium. There are a set of rules about when this applies and under what circumstances. They are on the Social Security website. I think they're probably also on the Medicare website. There are some possible exceptions. And it doesn't sound to me like they're going to look back 2 years at your tax return. So, for example, your premium for 2013 is based on your 2011 tax return.
I'm not talking about Medicare. I'm talking about Social Security.
Okay.
I totally missed.
The windfall elimination provision was passed in 1983 and affects CSRS people primarily. It can affect people who transferred from CSRS to FERS, but primarily CSRS people, and which means you'll get a Social Security benefit as long as you have your 40 credits.
I have.
Of course
that.
You do. Or you wouldn't be asking the question.
Right.
Now, to avoid, as a CSRS retiree, to avoid any effect of the windfall, in other words, to get your full Social Security payment, you'd have to have 30 years of substantial earnings.
Right.
Okay.
I'm aware of that, yes.
All right. Well, if you have less than that, the WEP doesn't start reducing till you hit 21 years of substantial coverage, and then each year the effect. So that's the landscape. So do you have, or do you not have 30 years of substantial?
No, I don't. Well, unless you can count my part-time work, if I get a percentage of that?
Well, no. Go to the website, SSA.gov, they'll tell you what you had to make each year to get, and it's an amount each year. They'll tell you.
I understand that, right.
Well, so you can figure it out.
If the qualifying threshold is $9,000 for a given year, and I made $7,500, they tell me that that accounts for nothing then.
That's right.
But I pay taxes on that. So they just absorb my tax.
Well, but you're still going to get a Social Security benefit. Now, this was a law that, you know, was designed to affect federal employees, basically federal employees.
Well, city, state,
and federal. City, state, and government employees.
Right.
And because they typically have these higher pensions than non-government
right.
employees. So that was the rationale behind it. So,
I understand that.
Okay. So, but no, you don't get credit. If you don't hit the threshold, you get zero credit for that year. You got to make whatever that amount is year by year to get substantial earnings. Okay.
Well, but let me add to that. You do get credit for that $7,500 in your example towards your regular Social Security
right,
benefit.
Right.
All you're losing is this special windfall part that is aimed at basically at low income people. So you will still get, you know, your Social Security benefit will keep going up every year you work.
Right. That's exactly right.
Well,
so it's not like you're losing the money, the tax money, the payroll tax money. You're just not helping yourself reduce the windfall.
Okay. There's a Tammy.
We know her.
Okay. She wrote this article, I read it online, and it's about a federal worker who worked a few years as the part-time job, this and that, and then went in the Army for a couple of years. Federal service for 28, and then he worked like 6 years after that. And then it said that he made $20,000 a year. And then she says, suppose you had a more substantial second career outside government than this guy. You would benefit from having a higher total wage as well as getting past the threshold of Social Security formula where the WEP is applied.
Right.
That means that if you make enough after you leave federal service?
Well, in your example, if he had 28 years of substantial earnings, he'd only...
Oh, yeah, 28 years with the federal, when he didn't pay any Social Security.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then he'd have to go 30 years, work 30 years past his CSRS retirement. This assumes he had no other Social Security service.
So if you make a certain amount, it doesn't equal 2 years. If you make $20,000 one year, if you make $80,000, still considered?
No. That doesn't matter how much you made. So
right.
If he had, let's say, a more likely scenario, he had 30 years under straight SIR, so he had no earnings under Social Security, but he worked
right.
in the private sector for 5 years prior to government, and
right.
each of those years he earned enough to get credit for 5 years of substantial
okay.
service. So he still...
Right.
To completely wipe out the WEP, he's still needs 25 years.
Right.
And you just have to meet that threshold to get credit for a year of substantial earnings.
Right.
And that's all. That's it. That's that simple.
Okay.
So you could make $150,000 or $25,000, and both would give you a substantial year. It just doesn't – that's all you get.
Okay. Okay. Well, what about the part-time money that for 20 years I paid in? They just keep that, and I get no credit for
no,
that?
You get credit for all your Social Security earnings. The question is not do you get credit for your earnings. The question is do you get an extra bonus, okay that poor
right.
people are only the ones who normally get, all right? And you're not going to get that extra bonus unless, as John's explained, you have 30 years of substantial earnings. But that's just for the bonus part, the WEP part.
Right.
You're going to get in all other respects, the regular Social Security benefit.
Okay.
WEP is only a few hundred dollars. This should not be driving your decisions as to work.
I'm going to have about 19 years of accredited service with where I paid Social Security.
Fine. You're going to get the full effect of the windfall elimination.
Which is, what'll give me what?
Roughly half of what you would have gotten okay. had you not been CSRS.
Okay.
Roughly
right.
half.
Right. Okay.
All righty. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for information. Because I was getting like kind of misinformation from Social Security.
Well, you got yeah. the right information here.
Well,
so
SSA.gov has a good explanation of the WEP.
Okay.
If you want to look at that.
All right.
Let's get back to Part
All
B.
Right.
Thank you. All righty. I just wrote down a question that I would have. On Part D, if you don't elect it, But later we unfortunately have this malady that would make it attractive to us to have Part D. Is there a penalty to pick up Part D later if you didn't pick it up earlier?
The answer is no, but let's be sure everybody understands. Part A is hospital. Part B is doctors. Part D is prescription drugs. Part A, there's no penalty. You just sign up at age 65. You can delay it, but only in some circumstances. That's a sort of a no-brainer. Part B, if you don't sign up, when you retire, if you retire past age 65, or if you're already retired, if you don't sign up at age 65, there is a penalty for every year you're not enrolled. It's 10% of the premium. So okay. If you don't enroll for 5 years, you're going to pay 50% more when you do enroll. Part D, the drug benefit, because you are in the FEHPP, which has substantial drug coverage, every FEHPP plan, you get what's called creditable coverage, and there's no penalty for signing up for Part D later. So I know that's a long answer to a simple question, but I want to just reinforce something that we said earlier. Part D can be a useful adjunct.
Okay, got a caller here. Good morning.
Good morning. I want to ask a follow up question on Part B. Now, I was civil service retirement, and I didn't pay anything in the Social Security until later on when I became part of the private. But I don't have enough. Now, question is, if I pick up whatever 4 or 5 credits that I don't have right now later, would I still be hit with a penalty because I'm after 65?
Now, you don't need credits to sign up for Part B. Anybody can buy Medicare Part B, all right?
Right.
How old are you, sir?
I am 68.
And you've...
Oh, I'm sorry, 67.
67. So, yeah. And you're a federal retiree?
Yes.
Okay, what health plan are you in?
I am in Blue Cross Blue Shield Standard.
Okay. You're paying a lot of premium for that plan. Yeah. It's an expensive plan to be in. And frankly, most people would not find it worthwhile to sign up for Part B, since in your case, there'd be a 2-year penalty. You'd pay 20% more than everybody else. But if you think it's important, you can do that. And there's a special Part B open season it's January to April. In Checkbook's guide, we go into some depth on the pros and cons of being in Part B when you have a FEHPP plan. I'll make just a very quick couple observations, and we make it into more later in the show. That Blue Cross or whatever plan you're in didn't get worse the year you turned 65. It still works just as well as it did when you were 64 years old. So the question is, what makes you think you need Part B? That's sort of one question. There are some benefits to having Part B. The most important of them is that it lets you go out of network to get medical care. That's not a big problem for people who are in Blue Cross because it has such a good network, but that's a possible plus. And also, most of the national plans, including Blue Cross Standard Option, give you this 100% wraparound guarantee.
Okay.
Okay. But here's the other question, and that is, I can't, even if I decide to go for Part B, I can't because I don't have enough number of credits to fully qualify for.
You don't need any credits for Part B.
You're confusing Medicare eligibility with Social Security eligibility, and they're two different things.
I am. But I'm talking about Medicare Part B, so that obviously is Medicare.
Right. But it has nothing to do with how many Social Security credits you have. It's what Walter's saying.
But am I eligible for, if I didn't pay into the Medicare system because I was part of the old CSR.
No, you did. You have. You've paid a Medicare.
Only since 1984.
No. You pay a Medicare payroll tax. I realize you don't have a pay stub anymore. But when you were working, you paid 1.45% of your salary Medicare tax.
Okay. Even those who were part of the old system.
Absolutely. I was part of the old system. I retired under CSRS, and for years and years and years, I paid the Medicare tax, which was 1.45% of salary.
Okay.
One quick question.
We got a plane on the runway, but go fast, please.
Well, in my situation, if all the doctors are participating providers, would it help me to switch to a basic? Or is it?
Yes. Okay. Now we got a good health insurance question.
Yeah.
Different question. Blue Cross Basic is one of the three or four, actually more plans that we recommend as very good alternatives to Blue Cross Standard. And its benefits are every bit as good. Its premium is not much more than half. You'll save, you know, well, for self only, close to $1,000, and for family, around $1,500, we estimate, taking into account both premium and out of pocket, from switching from standard to basic. But you can't go out of network. If you don't mind staying in network, and if your doctors are all network doctors, that's a great way to save money.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks. All right. Next caller. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. I think my question might have already been answered. My husband's already retired CSRS and on Medicare Parts A and B, and I'll be on Medicare next year. So do you have any recommendations for health plans that would fit our bill next year?
Sure. What plan are you in now?
Blue Cross Blue Shield Anthem.
The standard option,
yes,
I assume.
Yeah, standard, yes.
Yeah, the problem is this. It's a great, your benefits are great. You know, the wraparound that you get with Medicare A and B gives you 100% coverage for hospital and physician.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get that in lots of plans, not just Blue Cross Standard. And here's the hitch with where you are. The total premium you will pay, that is the for sure expense, even if you never see a doctor, with Blue Cross Standard and Medicare Part B, A and B is where you pay the premium, is over $7,700 for a married couple.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be paying that much.
No.
All the other national plans, except Blue Cross Basic, give you this wraparound deal. So what we suggest is you take a look at, if you're eligible, Foreign Service, GEHA Standard, APWU High Option. Letter carriers won't save you quite as much as the others, but it will save you. Most of the HMOs, they don't give you the wraparound benefit, but they do allow you to go out of network if you have Part B. Mm-hmm. So for sure, you have a week to decide, and I urge you to take a look at some of these other options.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for your great show.
All right. All righty, Walt, at the... what am I going to call it? The show I was at last week that you conducted, the healthcare...
The seminar,
thank you. There were a couple, I thought, pretty good questions. Experimental treatments and do plans accept acupuncture? The experimental treatments is a tough one.
Well, it's complicated. Let me just do the acupuncture first because it's straightforward. And also, this is one of those things that if you have the checkbook's guide, you can just look up which plants have acupuncture. And most of them do now, but not all.
And how do you get checkbook's guide?
Oh, well, I'm so glad you asked. Simplest and best way for most is simply go to our website, www.guidetohealthplans.org. And that's Guide to Health Plans, one word, .org. And there you can find right away, for example, if you're an employee, your agency may have already bought you a free subscription that you don't know about. You can we let you check that right there. Or you can, you know, buy a subscription for yourself. It's about $10. And you can there's a paperback version, but we strongly recommend the online version because we can do lots of neat things online we can't do on paper, like tell you if your doctor, which plans your doctor is in. Anyway, back to the acupuncture thing. The plan benefits for acupuncture are kind of limited, and they vary. What we do is then steer you to the plans that are both going to likely across the board save you money, and then within that group, which ones have acupuncture, and you can then go actually compare the benefits side by side or download the brochures side by side and look at the page where that's discussed. Now, experimental treatment, whole different question. No health insurance plan will cover experimental medical treatment. They cover only accepted standard medical treatment. This kind of question typically arises in the case of drugs, and the case there is if it's not FDA approved, it's experimental and no plan will cover it. They will cover your regular medical care costs as if you weren't getting the drug, you know, if you have to be in the hospital anyway, so that's not an issue. If it's a cancer drug, It's probably FDA approved for one cancer, and if your doctor prescribes it for another, the plans will almost invariably cover it, and you check. The answer is you check with your physician or you check with the plan does this obscure, exotic, and very expensive drug I'm taking, you know, is it covered and how well? And if you already know the drug you'll be taking next year, you can check right now during open season and help let that influence your plan choice.
Okay. How about one more kind of specialty item, hearing aids?
That's been a push of OPMs in the last few years, and they've urged the plans to add that benefit, and a lot of them have. So if you have hearing problems, there are now lots of plans that will give you good coverage. We go into this in some detail in Checkbook's guide, and you know there are variations. Some plans cover children only, others adults only, and others either children or adults. And we give you a side-by-side comparison of the benefits. In many cases, the HMOs are the best deal. You know, Aetna Open Access Standard, Kaiser High and Standard, very good benefit. Of the national plans, Blue Cross Basic and Standard are both very good on hearing aids, as is Samba Standard and High. And we recommend Samba Standard option. It's a good buy. High option's a bit pricey.
Okay, thanks, Walt. And we've got a caller. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about the high deductible health plan and the health savings account. My understanding is that some of them give you back, pass back money, but also they charge you for maintenance of the account. I cannot find any information on that. Can you recommend for Maryland which ones are better accounts, less cost to maintain a HSA?
Okay, yes and no. I haven't studied that in any depth, but the ones I've looked at, the account maintenance fee is very small, you know, a couple of percent a year. So I don't think that should be a big factor in your choice. But look, compare, there's about three or four high deductible plans available in Maryland, or the whole D.C. metro area. In fact, all but one of them are available everywhere in the country. GEA has a high deductible plan. Mail Handlers, MHBP, high deductible. Are the two I'd look at. Aetna, I should have mentioned Aetna. Also, Health Fund, high deductible. Take a look at those three. We rate them all as very good buys. And in the brochure for those three plans, they have a page or two, actually more than a few pages, on how their health savings account works. And they will tell you who the agent is, what bank or brokerage they've hired to run it. And and you can actually then call and check the fees. But I think I'd focus mainly on the insurance aspects of this. And you are very smart to consider a high deductible plan. They're a little different than regular plans because the deductibles are bigger. But the health savings account that you get with those plans is, we call it an IRA on steroids. The money is tax preferred going in. It grows tax preferred. You can even invest it in stocks. And you take it out tax preferred. It's not use or lose money. It carries over year after year. It's your money for the rest of your life. And, if you're reasonably healthy for a couple of years, you may wind up in a situation where you never have to pay anything for healthcare because your health savings account will have grown so much.
And so in the page that you have on your, in your book, that sort of does a comparison in the CDHP and HDHP section. You have one that's minus 660, and you have the Aetna one, what you just mentioned, is about 320. That's the no cost. No cost meaning if we don't use any services, right?
Yeah. If you're a current federal employee, the premium you pay is tax preferred. You're actually probably only paying about two-thirds of what you think you're paying because the premium doesn't count as earned income for purposes of any of the taxes, the income or OASDI. In these high deductible plans, in most cases, the amount of the health savings account that the premium pays for is bigger than the after-tax cost to you of the premium. So, and the annual physical, by the way, is free. So if you have no medical care spending other than your annual physical, you will wind up actually money ahead at the end of the year.
So looking at your table, I mean, that's amazing. Looking at your table, it looks like Aetna would be the best one for Maryland.
Well, I think you have to, I guess I would say it depends on your family size. There's a HSA size for self only and a different one for families.
Yeah.
I think Aetna is certainly one to look at right away. And in most situations, you'll wind up slightly more money at the end of the year, that one than the others. But the differences aren't huge there. So I would make my decision based on the other features of the plan, GEHA, mail handlers, Aetna, and if you want to start with a preference towards Aetna, that's fine. And make sure that all the other features work for you. For example, is your doctor preferred in any one of those might be a big factor.
Okay, I can tell the caller has been studying. Now, Walt, you mentioned the book.
And he's
the book
he's smart. He's a hard worker.
I can tell he's smart, but he's smart to call, too. But here's the question. I understand there's some agencies that will, quote, buy your book and put it on their intranet. Am I accurate in that?
Or internet. So that's if you go to our website, guidetohealthplans.org, you can find out. The problem is the agency HR people probably mentioned in a footnote on page 3 of their annual open season email that no one reads that you had free access to Checkbooks Guide. But so you probably don't even know you have free access if you have it. I continually run into people at agencies who don't realize they already have it. And you get typically you get a password and you can use it at home or in the office. There's no issue here if you're allowed to use office time to choose a health plan. And I recommend it. The caller who just was on is a guy who's going to save a lot of money because he checked out our ratings and discovered that the high deductible plans are terrific buys.
All righty. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you very much.
All righty. Good call. All righty. HMOs and Part B. Is there any, I won't say mystery to that, or is there any synchronicity to that?
There is. It's a great combination. The HMOs don't give you this wraparound benefit that the national plans do. You know, you pay nothing for a hospital and doctor if you have Medicare Parts A and B. But that hardly matters because in most of the HMOs, you're only going to pay the $30 a visit kind of thing anyway. So, you know, saving on 5 or 10 doctor visits is not going to, you know, break the bank or save the piggy bank one way or the other. The big advantage of having Part B in an HMO is you can go out of network. The HMO, you know, typically their benefit only covers doctors in their network. But for current employees, you have to stick in the network or pay out of your pocket. But once you have Medicare will pay, you know, for doctors 80% of the cost out of network. So that's a way to be, for example, in Kaiser and yet preserve the flexibility to go to the Mayo Clinic if you decide you really have to go there. I want to make clear, it's not necessarily the best choice. The best choice may be to not bother having Part B at all. But if you've made the decision to have Part B, it works quite well with HMOs.
Okay. Got another question. A child writes in, it wasn't a child, it was an adult child. For their retired parents who are aging and maybe can't make the decisions like they could before, and they were thinking of dropping the EVHB because it was too high.
Well, actually, what they were thinking of doing is suspending their federal health benefits and going into Part C Advantage Plan. I don't know if they had other parts of Medicare like B, but they can do that. But if they decide, oh, I made a mistake, a year later during the next open season, they can get back in the FEHB.
Is there a statute of limitations that if they're out for a certain period of time, they can't come back?
No, that's a good, reasonable question. But no, any open season, which we're in now, if you had suspended your federal health benefits coverage to go to the Medicare Advantage Plan, Part C, you can get back in and during any open season in the future. So that was what this daughter was asking for her parents.
Let me jump in and talk about the strategic question here. The problem with having Medicare Part B and an FEHB plan is you're paying two sets of premiums. And either alone is very good insurance coverage. So why are you paying two sets of premiums? So people are looking for a way to reduce the cost of that. One way is to keep both but move to a low premium FEHBP plan. You never drop FEHBP. That's sort of the one rule. You should ever consider dropping it. But another way to pay only one premium is to suspend your FEHBP and go into a Medicare Advantage plan, which is what John was just talking about. That the Medicare Advantage system is modeled after the FEHPP. They have a huge array of plans similar to those in the FEHPP, you know, HMOs, PPOs, fee-for-service, and so on. And they all have catastrophic protection, okay? You have to have Medicare Parts A, B, and D, but D comes with them, and you're not – actually, you only have to have Medicare Parts A and B to make that switch, and you have to call OPM to do it. If you're interested in that option, paying one set of premiums instead of two sets, by all means, go to Medicare.gov and check out their plan finder. And that's a prudent and smart thing for people to do, if they're willing to be a little bit frisky in their choices.
But as Walt alluded to, first, before you do that, check out cheaper FEHBP plans. See, this person was having trouble because their FEHBP premium was too high. So my recommendation was, before you suspend your coverage, which you can do, look at cheaper alternatives within the federal health benefits system. And, of course, Walt's book will help you do that.
But, of course.
And that's the first step. And then if you still want to go to Medicare Part C as your providing plan, okay, fine. After the due diligence, it's cost effective.
Okay, we've got a caller with an astute question. Good morning.
Hello? Am I the caller?
You're astute.
Hello?
And you're on.
Okay. This has to do with someone who's a full-time employee now but going to retire soon. And currently we have Blue Cross Blue Shield Basic, okay? So we were limited by the copays. If you had surgery, it would just be the copay. And then Blue Cross Blue Shields would pay the doctor the rest. Now, I am told someplace reading that if you don't take Medicare Part B, that Blue Cross Blue Shield Basic will now only pay what Medicare would pay. So does that now take away the limit of my copays and put me at risk of paying, say I had a $10,000 surgery and Medicare only paid $7,000, would I be at risk for the balance of that?
No,
rather
you,
than just paying?
Not to worry, okay? The deal, if you're in Blue Cross Basic, any of these FEHP plans, and the plan has a stated cost to you for cost sharing, say $30 a visit, that doesn't change. Whether or not you turn 65 and except for an additional benefit, which most of them give you if you have Medicare Part B, you can wind up not having to pay the $30 at all. But you're certainly never going to have to pay more than the $30. It's true that the plan won't pay more than Medicare would pay, but the doctor's not allowed to charge you more than Medicare would pay. And it's all transparent to you. That's behind the scenes between the plan and Medicare, or as the case may be, just the plan only. You're still only paying the $30. So don't worry about it.
And if I had the surgery, let's say I had to have some surgery, and I would have paid $100 or $150 copayment, and then Blue Cross Blue Shield would have picked up the balance. But now Medicare's, what they would pay is much less. So now, is somebody going to give me a bill for the difference?
No, they're not allowed to. The Blue Cross plan you're in says you're going to pay $150 if they say that your share for surgery is $150. Whether you have Medicare or not, it's $150. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Now, you do need to worry about going out of network, because in the case of Blue Cross Basic, you pay it all. Okay.
Right, I understand.
Okay. But by the way, even out of network, and even without Medicare Part B, doctors are limited in what they can charge you once you turn 65. Special law, just for federal annuitants.
Okay. So, in other words, I don't have some unlimited liability just because I retired, and even though I'm on the same plan, I'm going to get the same coverage?
You're going to get the same coverage. It's just as good at age 65 as it was at age 64. There's no practical difference.
That's very unclear. Both my husband and myself find that reading in the Blue Cross booklet when they talk about, well, it's only going to pay what Medicare would have paid.
OPM, that's the standard language OPM puts in all the plan brochures, and it is confusing, and I wish it were clearer. Part of it's just there is a lot of complexity. There's lots of angles that aren't relevant in your case, so we're not talking about them. But that's why you see all that confusing language. But so don't worry.
Is there a reason for, you know, like paying for Medicare, in other words, for signing up for Medicare Part B? Would you get the 100%, like I heard earlier, for the basic plan as well as for, we're not in the standard, which is
no, I understand. In the case of basic, that's the one national plan that doesn't give you this 100% wraparound deal. Let me say, however, that's not a reason not to take Part B, because Part B will be primary, and if, for example, you'll now be able to go out of network in Medicare, in Blue Cross Basic.
Right.
So the argument, the problem is two Medicare Part B premiums for you and your husband next year will be almost $2,600. Okay. Over $2,500. And you're not getting a whole, you're not going to get that back in any of these plans by, you know, oh, I don't have to pay the $30 visit copay anymore. I mean, no one has that many doctor visits. So you're not going to get most of that money back.
Well, can you tell me, what isn't in the, if you're not going to get the 100% wraparound on the basic, what are you getting?
The ability to go out of network at no cost, at low cost to you. Okay, Medicare will.
So if I stay in network, I will get the 100% wraparound?
No. In Blue Cross Basic, you'll have the same plan you have now. It won't change. The benefits will be exactly the same.
So if I stay in the basic, I have the same copays, and if I do Part B with it, which doesn't sound like it's a good deal, I'd still have the copays.
Right. The big advantage of Part B in that case is going out of network at very low cost to you.
Okay,
if that doesn't matter to you, if you're sure you're going to keep using mostly Blue Cross doctors, I'd say fine, stay where you're at.
Right, because I got the impression that the copays disappeared.
Okay,
they disappear for all the other national plans, but not for Blue Cross Basic.
Okay.
So you might, well, if that's a problem for you, look at another FEHBP plan.
Okay, would you recommend another plan then?
I would recommend you go to Walt's book, checkbook.org.
No, I'll give you the recommendation. Go take a look at GEA Standard Option. GEHA, Standard Option.
Standard. Okay.
And you could take a look at Foreign Service if you're eligible. If you mail handlers benefit, MHBP, Medicare pilot is an option, but you won't get the 100%. They pay your Part B premium, but then you don't get the 100% wraparound. Any of the HMOs pretty much are good options, but they don't give you the 100% wraparound. But take a look at GEHA, take a look at APWU, and if you like NALC.
Okay.
All right. Let's.
Okay. I thank you very much for your help.
Thank you for the call. If we switch off, we really zeroed in on retirees, and nothing wrong with that. That's what we do for a living at NITP. But any comments to the mid-career folks for shopping, or the beginning don't seem to care.
It's not on
the radar screen yet, but mid-career, what pearls of wisdom do we have for them?
Well, I think anyone who's actually at any age, but who's not set in their ways yet, certainly should take a look at high deductible or consumer-driven options, okay, because there's a whole bunch of really good options there that are well worth looking at.
What's a consumer-driven option?
They're very similar to the high deductible. There is a high deductible. There is a kind of savings account, but it's a different kind of account, and it's in the plan's name, not your name. So when you leave the plan, even though it can accumulate, if you ever leave the plan gets it back instead of you.
Okay.
But those plans have very good benefits, very good catastrophic protection, and we can't recommend them as a group too highly. There's a half dozen really inexpensive HMOs. If you're a young or middle-aged family with kids and a lot of visits and all that, you know, there's a lot to be said for Kaiser Standard Option, for CareFirst Blue Choice Standard, for Aetna Open Access Basic, for Care First Blue Choice High option. I mean, there's a bunch of HMO solid options that are inexpensive. And, of course, the plans we've already mentioned, for retirees, but they work very well for people who are active employees. GEHA Standard Option, Blue Cross Basic, Foreign Service, APWU High Option.
Okay. Thanks, Walt. And just final minutes, we'll put that phone number out again because the calls were good. 202-465-3080.
Yeah, the caller's questions are better than our questions. So please call.
Yes, 202-465-3080. We have about, 8.5 minutes left? Andrew says yes. Okay, so give us a holler. Now, we really pounded on Part B. I'm going to ask probably the dopey question of the day. What about dropping or not taking Part B?
Well, that's the issue, I think, for a lot of people.
But the risk, the premium is high, but am I penalized if I come back in?
John has got that totally figured out.
Well, yeah, you are penalized. If you don't get in it at 65 when you're first eligible, each year you delay costs you 10% on top of the Part B premium. So, for example, if you wait till 68, you're paying 30% more.
Of the premium?
The premium, yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's those penalties that accumulate. But if you're looking at to be or not to be, you want to look at your state of health. And are you a low user of, as I'd say most people are relatively low users. So I'll give you my example to answer Bob's question. When I was 65 last year, I was looking whether I take Part B or not. I immediately signed up for Part A, because the hospitalization. That you want to do, because you've already paid for that, so there's no additional cost to you. So I'm looking at Part B. Now, I was in the higher income group, so at the time, I would have paid about $2,000 a year for Part B premiums. I go to the doctor once a year, typically, for a physical, and I think my co-payment's $20. So if I go to Part B, I'm paying an extra $1,980 and getting essentially nothing for it. However, what if I get sick down the road, and it looks, particularly if it's going to be a chronic illness, well, I can still get into Part B, but I'm going to have to pay the accumulated penalty. So what do I do? I look at what I would pay for Part B with all the accumulated penalties years later and make a cost-benefit decision. And either the numbers lead me towards a late enrollment in Part B, or I say, no, it's really not worth it. Even though I'm paying out of pocket, I'm still not going to make up the Part B premium. So it's simply a math problem then. And that's the decision. Those are the things I looked at and decided not to take Part B because I'm a low user of medical care.
All right. Thank you, John. We have a caller. Good morning.
Good morning. I was considering one of the maybe consumer-driven health plans. Right now I have GEHA, but I would kind of expect that those plans' premiums would be much lower than the regular plans. And they're not. There's hardly a difference. I think between GEHA and one of the consumer-driven that I was looking at for my area were $4 a pay period. So can you talk about that a little bit? I'm trying to figure out if it would really be worth switching to one of those.
Okay. Well, the problem in your case is you're already in one of the lowest premium plans.
Right.
So it's hard to beat the GEHA standard option premium. And the consumer-driven plans basically are in the same ballpark. They vary a bit. A couple of them are a few dollars less. A few dollars more. So, but they're about where you are. So the really interesting question for you is, you're not going to save, you're already saving as much premium dollars as you're likely to save. The question for you is, would you rather be in a consumer-driven plan where you get an HRA or HSA account, depending on whether it's a high deductible or a whether it's an HD or a CD plan, okay, you'll have your free annual physical. You'll have the savings account. If you don't use much medical care, you'll never get to the high deductible, okay? And not only that, your savings account will carry over into the next year and can build up over time. In all these plans, you have really good catastrophic. Once you pay, if you do get a sickness, okay, or get hit by a truck or something, you will pay $1,000, $1,500, depends on the plan, deductible. Then regular insurance kicks in. They'll pay 90% or 85%. You know, they vary a little bit there, but regular insurance. And then once you're out of pocket, and the number varies from plan to plan, but it's typically for a single person around $5,000 or $6,000. One or two of them are a little lower than that even. Once you're out of pocket that much, the catastrophic ceiling kicks in, and you're home free. So they're very good choices. They all have a better prescription drug benefit than GEHA's standard option. That's its one weakness. So if your drug bills are running high, that might be a good reason to switch. But on the other hand, if you have high drug bills, you know, if you're the one category of person who shouldn't probably be in a consumer-driven or high deductible plan is a person who knows they're going to be spending several $1,000s a year on routine medical care for either for doctors or for drugs, because you're going to blow through the savings account and be in that high deductible area. So you really belong in a traditional health plan like GEHA. So I hope those are all the factors that matter, and I've covered them all, and I wish you good luck in making your final decision.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, Walt, this has been great and having you here, but we only have you here for another 2 minutes. Are you going to be doing any health fairs this week?
I am. I'm doing one at the Indian Health Service out in Rockville. I don't think many people can really want to go to that, and you might even have trouble getting in the building. But I will be on my Causey show on Wednesday morning at 10, so on Federal News Radio here. So that'll be one more chance for people to ask me a question. But, you know, my main advice to people is go out, and whether you're using our guide or just the very good website at OPM, opm.gov/insure, one way or another, spend a few minutes comparing plans, thinking about your health situation. Do not blithely next Sunday watch the next football game, and at midnight, ding, the little bell rings and open season is over, and you yet again have not thought about how much money you could save by changing health plans. In a year of pay freezes, the typical family in the FEHVP can save close to $2,000 by changing plans. That's giving yourself a pay raise. And so if you are you really should be thinking about ways to save money.
That's a tax-free pay raise too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hmm. I'm going to listen to you more often. And as far as football games, it's only one to watch, and that's tonight. So then they have another almost week to pick the plans.
Except the Redskins are on Sunday, next Sunday at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, but the game of the year is tonight. Anyway, we need to get off the air. Andrew's given us the high sign. Walt, thanks. We'll do it again next year, and I'm sure we'll talk during the year. John, good to see you. And listen to us next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.